Okay, we're going to call the Senate Education Committee meeting to order. Today is Valentine's Day, February 14th, 2011, and the time is just a little bit past 8 o'clock, 8:02. In attendance today is, to my right here, Co-Chair Thomas, to my left, Vice Chair Davis, and Senator French. Senator Stevens will not be joining us today, so we do have a quorum to conduct business. Also, again, we have Senator Giesel in the audience. Welcome. Always good to have you. We had, if you recall from last week, we'd hoped to continue the discussion on the performance scholarships, Senate Bill 43, and we'd hoped to have a committee substitute ready to go today to review one more time and to pass it out. But as typically happens, what seems to be simple changes for us, when it gets to alleged legal, it becomes a little more complicated. So we do not have the CS ready yet today. Hopefully we'll have it by this afternoon. We'll run it around to everybody's office so that you have a chance to review it, look at it, and hope to take it up then on Wednesday. So today we'll just be taking up Senate Bill 9. I think we had also looked at the possibility of Senate Bill 83. And I don't think we're quite ready for that one today either. So just Senate Bill 9, which is an act to raise compulsory school attendance age. This is Senator Davis's bill. This is the first hearing for this bill. I believe, Senator Davis, you have your trustee staff with you today.
Yes, I'd like to bring Mr. Obermeyer up, but I'll make a statement and I'll just sit here.
Okay,
rather than going over there, if it's okay with
you. That is perfectly fine. The floor is yours, Senator Davis.
All right, thank you. To the committee, and I'd just like to say this is a bill that was didn't pass last year, but it was heard last year and had gone through both bodies but didn't quite make it through. I felt that it was worthwhile to bring it back again, and this is to change the compulsory age for school-aged kids to go to school from 7 to 6. And to 18 at the higher number, from 16 to 18. It's been known to show that in many states where they have upped the ages to age 17 or 18, that they have seen a decrease in crime rates, pregnancy rates, dropout rates, and even it's not a magic bullet to handle all the ills that we have, but it's one of the tools in the tools box that we need. And for that reason, I'm bringing this piece of legislation back for discussion to see if we might be able to lower and up the ages for the children. It wouldn't be a big hardship on the state for this to happen. The age six, our children are already going to kindergarten already. 90% of the children enrolled in school are in kindergarten already. So changing it to age six would not make an impact. Now, there are ways that a child's parents could not have them in school should they choose not to have them past 16. And all those are listed within the bill, and I'll have my aide to go over that as we discuss the bill further.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Davis. Mr. Obermeyer.
For the record, Tom Obermeyer, aide to Senator Davis. The bill before you is Senate Bill 9, an act relating to the compulsory school attendance and relating to the crime of contributing to the delinquency of a minor. This bill changes the Alaska compulsory school attendance ages from 7 to 16 currently to 6 to 18 under this bill. It reduces the ages the senator indicated by 1 year and increases by 2 years the higher age. At the same time, it necessarily amends the criminal statute of contributing to the delinquency of a minor from the maximum age 16 to 18. The legislative intent of this bill is to require all students to start school earlier when their brains are growing and developing at a dramatic rate from birth to age 7 and to stay in school long enough to graduate. This bill allows earlier identification of children with learning disabilities and more time to take successful corrective action. This bill will not preclude parents from homeschooling children or using charter or alternative schools or any of the other of the 12 enumerated exceptions to the compulsory school education under 1430.01b, which is starting on page 2 through page 3 of your bill. including the completion of grade 12 or graduation from a secondary school before age 18, which is an additional requirement we put in the bill at the request of the school districts. The Alaska compulsory school age statute is out of date with modern educational practice and thinking. The law has not changed since territorial days, really since 1929, when few children attended school beyond eighth grade or bothered to graduate because most jobs did not require much education. The majority of Alaska students today are already in school by age six, and many by the minimum age five. Head Start and pre-kindergarten programs are growing in popularity. The state already funds a pilot pre-kindergarten program, and SB 6 this year proposes funding such a program statewide. In 1852, Massachusetts became the first state to pass compulsory school attendance laws, and by 1918, all states required children to receive an education. Today, every state and territory requires children to enroll in public or private education or to be homeschooled. 32 states require students to begin their education by 6 or 5 and to remain in school until 16 or older. 24 states and American Samoa set the minimum age 6, and 8 states and the District of Columbia, Puerto Rico, and the Virgin Islands set the minimum at 5. All children are required to continue their education into their high school years, with 20 states settling the compulsory cutoff at age 18, 11 at 17, and 19 states, including Alaska and the Virgin Islands, at 16. By increasing the school attendance age to 18, this bill would discourage earlier dropouts and reduce juvenile crime, teen pregnancy, and other at-risk behaviors. Studies have found that students without a diploma earn less than 75% of those with a diploma. They are more likely to live in poverty, go to jail, and have health problems. The Alaska Department of Education and Early Development reported 8,245 students, or 67.7%, graduated in 2010, while 3,186 dropped out. The graduation rate of Alaska Native students was 55.4%, a group which experienced twice the dropout rate of all students. These rates remain well below the national average. The National Education Association's first priority 2 years ago in its 12-point action plan was for reducing the school dropout rate was to, in quotes, mandate high school graduation or equivalency as compulsory for everyone below the age of 21. It reported, just as we established compulsory attendance to the age of 16 or 17 in the beginning of the 20th century, it is appropriate and critical to eradicate the idea of dropping out before achieving a diploma. To compete in the 21st century, all of our citizens at minimum need a high school education. Opponents to increasing compulsory school age who are concerned about forcing students to be in the classroom against their will argue that these students may become disruptive and require more time and expense on behavior and truancy problems. This bill, however, is directed at more than just seat time. It is to become part of a larger plan to motivate rather than to punish or ignore students. It aims to help students stay in school long enough to graduate and to go on to college or better paying jobs. Students will want to come to school, stay in school, and graduate if academic problems are identified early and they are helped long before they drop out. For those students who want to work or are not as academically inclined, school districts are encouraged to continue accredited alternative schools and work-study programs to help students earn credits toward a diploma if they must work at the same time. Coupled with early efforts to retain, train, and graduate, this bill can bring hope and success to thousands of Alaska students who otherwise might not stay in school long enough to graduate or develop to the best of their potential. I'd be happy to answer any questions if you like.
Okay, thank you, Mr. Obermeyer. Questions from the committee? Mr. Obermeyer, I think Senator Davis had mentioned in her opening remarks that there were some exceptions to the upper age. One that comes to mind for me is, I believe at age 17, you could join the military.
Is that? Not anymore. Mr. Chairman, would you like for him to go through the bill because it's all stated in there? It's on page 2, beginning on page 2.
Of the bill?
There's a sectional inside your binder that you have, I'm sure. But we could walk you through the entire bill, and that would answer your question that you just asked, if the committee so desire that. Otherwise, he can just answer the question that you
Yeah, I think if you just answer my question.
Yeah, through the to the chair, Senator Meyer, I don't believe the language of the bill addresses the exceptions for military. And I have no idea where we stand on that. There have been so many rules and exceptions since the initiation of the war in Afghanistan and Iraq. I'm not sure what we stand on any area at this point. But if there are exceptions, I'm sure that they could be identified quickly for you. And maybe the Department of Education in the room here could answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, a 17-year-old cannot go into the service, rental services, without having approval from the parent if they were to go in at 17. Ordinarily, it would be 18, at least 18.
Okay. So if you had your parents' consent to join the military, then you could join the military.
So then that doesn't interfere with the bill. If you look at the various exceptions that they have, a parent has many ways to decide if they do not want their child to go to school, and of course, some of the things that's in the bill.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman?
Yes, Senator French.
Maybe just as a point of clarification, the bill would basically raise the age by 2 years, but it's really aimed at keeping 17-year-olds in school. Is that right? 18-year-olds, it says under 18. So once you turn 18, you can leave school, not be subject to the bill.
Through the chair, Senator French, yes, that is exactly right. It's determined that they reach majority at age 18. They're adults. We don't have control over them at that point. But one of the intents of this bill is to give some encouragement to parents who are having trouble with their children to point to their children and say, stay in school. The law says you're there until 18. Don't drop out at 16. And it's implied even in the sponsor statement that this is to give another avenue for schools and parents to work with children long enough to get a diploma. And it has been decided that while we're not really looking at seat time, if they're there long enough, they will avoid many of the, if they drop out and they have all those high-risk behaviors, they're really heading downhill rather than ahead. And it was this bill was strongly supported in the last legislature by Carol Como, superintendent of the Anchorage School District. I don't know if she intends to respond to this bill, but I do know that this has been discussed for a long time and that a great number of states are increasing it, over 20 states now, to age cutoff at age 18. So it's something that I think does deserve attention. We haven't changed our law since 1929. There is a tremendous increase in the need for education to compete in this working world worldwide. This is just one step in the process, and it gives the legislature an opportunity to deal with it in this session.
Any other questions? Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Obermeyer, do they keep statistics? Obviously, I see the statistics on the numbers that dropped out. Do they keep statistics on why and what particular age? Is that something you have anyhow, that information?
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, the school district has people, assessment people, that track dropouts. They make sure that they're out of the system. If they transfer to another school district, they keep enormous statistics on all of this. They often have, I believe, as I understand it, exit interviews with students who plan on dropping out, and they try to find out why and what they might be doing wrong or how they can improve the system to avoid this. Often, though, it's the children who have had trouble earlier in school, starting in junior high, and they weren't tracked carefully enough, or they didn't work with the parents or whoever. There's a number of issues to blame here. And by the time they reach 16, they're just not so inclined to continue. I mean, there's been some discussion about the high school graduation exam. If they fail that, they don't want to proceed, or if they pass it, they think, I'm so smart, I don't need any more education. But basically, a lot of this is due to just the lack of performance by the time they reach this age to drop out. And some of them do have economic problems, and they have to work.
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Davis?
That question should be addressed by the department as far as what data they have on dropouts. We don't have all that information, but there is somebody from the department here.
Okay. We'll ask that question for the administration then. Any other questions, Senator Thomas?
Not right off the top of my head, although the there was an issue that that they become a problem when they they're sitting around bored in school and having to stay and not wanting to stay. So that was an issue that I saw. So I'm glad to see that the bill, and I didn't find the area specifically other than it kind of alludes to the idea that the department will cause the more attention, and we're obviously looking at doing that, more attention to earlier on, and so it will take some time to have that effect, obviously, for those kids of that age, but certainly that is right. That was always a concern I had of them sitting around being disruptive in class, because it doesn't take many to spoil the whole classroom when they're just not paying attention or actually being disruptive, causing a problem for the teachers where they have to continually send them out of the class. So that is an issue. I guess we look at trying to correct that with many of the other things that we're attempting to do, even with the scholarship program.
Through the chair, Senator Thomas, I had given a good deal of thought to that. And some of the members, some of the students who really are disruptive that don't want to be in school, they're not going to show up. And that's regrettable, but there are those that won't. And instead of being just sent home every day, they eventually just don't show. And if they aren't working with the parents, they become part of the truant issue. And without a great number of truant officers in the state, the schools are asked to continue to monitor those that are at home or what they're doing. And so there's a burden on this on the school districts as well as the parents in trying to comply with this new age requirement.
Thank you.
Thank you, Senator Thomas. One other question, you sort of alluded to it, Mr. Obermeyer. What are the penalties now for noncompliance?
Senator Meyer, I think I'd have to defer to you, the Department of Education, on that. It's my understanding that, you know, from that children that don't show up X number of days are suspended. Some of them have suspension in schools, outside of school. They can be, I assume, after a certain number of days, expelled from the school system. So I think the department needs to answer that question.
Okay, so but I mean that doesn't seem like much of a penalty to a kid if he wants to drop out anyway if he gets expelled. So, okay. Well, very good. Any other questions then for the sponsor's aide? Okay, seeing none. Thank you very much. Okay, I do have a couple people here who have signed up to testify, and then we have some questions for somebody from the administration that we'll ask after we have the testimony here. So let's start with Larry Scanlon, I believe it is. Is that correct?
It's Lori.
Oh, Lori. Sorry, Lori.
Okay, I'm used to that.
Oh, yes, Lori.
Thanks for having me.
Sure.
I just saw this morning.
Okay.
Good morning. Good morning.
Great. Well, if you could correct me then and put your name on the record, please.
Thank you. I'm Lori Scandling. I'm the assistant superintendent of the Juneau School District. Graduation is my passion. Coincidentally, I grew up in Anchorage, Kodiak, and Fairbanks, where I graduated from high school. I've been with the Juneau School District for 18 years, and as I said, my passion has been high school graduation. I spent nearly a decade at Juneau Douglas High School. In part of that time, I founded and managed an alternative program for the very kids you just referred to, and was an assistant administrator principal there for 2 years. I then became principal of the alternative high school here in Juneau. It's a 150-student high school, and I'm in my third year as assistant superintendent. This is not the first time I've come to decision makers and asked that the state stop giving permission to someone who yesterday was 15 and today is 16 on their birthday from dropping out. As an administrator, on more than one occasion, I've been brought the dropout papers by a student on their 16th birthday and asked me to sign them. It was always my policy as a teacher and an administrator to never sign dropout papers. They would have to find someone else to do that. And why is that? Because the correlations between not finishing high school and everything we know about the public costs in terms of health problems, incarceration, domestic violence, and rehab are evident. More than half the states have already determined that students should not be allowed on their own accord to leave school at age 16 or even 17. This is a parent empowerment bill. Right now, lots of teenagers go through a lot of troubled times. I was in that category myself. Fortunately, I had parents who insisted that I graduate from high school. Right now, a parent of a young man or young woman who is being a typical teenager and maybe making some poor decisions has no backup from the state to keep their kid in school until they finish or until they're the age of majority, which is the age to join the military. Brain research today is quite a bit different than 1929. We know that the frontal lobe, which is the executive function decision-making part, is not hardwired until young men and women are in their 20s. And to think that a 15-year-old on the day of their 16th birthday can make a reasonable decision probably is not something I'd want to bet on. They're minors. We don't let youth under 18 do a whole lot of things. And a decision that will impact them for the rest of their lives should be one of those things that we don't allow them to do until they are a person who is of the age of majority. Having been on the front lines for more than 15 years working with dropouts, I can tell you it's not the HSGQE that forces children out the door. That is a low-level standard, that HSGQE. You might know it measures about an eighth grade proficiency. We don't want high school students graduating without that level of proficiency at a minimum. And the other thing, and you probably know this, you can take the HSGQE as many times as you like after you've gotten your certificate of finishing your credits, as many times in adulthood. So you can come back over and over. And in fact, we recruit our students to come back and do that if there was a portion they didn't pass. As for students not wanting to be in class, that's understandable. For some students sitting in an environment where they're more passive during the day, which academics many times does require, is completely understandable, which is why we have homeschool options across our state, including in our district. We fund for students to be there full-time all day, every day, until they graduate. I wanted to mention one thing about the military. I had a woman who dropped out just 4 credits short. She's going to join the military, and she did, and she came back 5 years later, and she said, if I could only convince people how important it is to get that diploma. She was an incredibly intelligent young woman. She said, I've been passed over for promotions more than 5 times because in spite of my competency, my peer with whom I was competing had the diploma and I did not. If we really, really cared about all students being successful, not only would we raise the age for compulsory attendance to 18, but we would lower it to age 4 if we really cared about what brain research tells us. That's when that elastic brain is eager for learning. And we know from data nationally that children who enter kindergarten behind their peers at a grade K level have a 1 in 8 chance of ever catching up. So the picture is a big one. Please stop giving permission to youth to not attend school. We are working as hard as we can within our resources to assure every student finish the credits, learn the material, pass the HSGQE, and have choices after high school. Please help us do that officially by changing this law. Thank you. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Ms. Scandling. I think, I can't speak for others, but myself, I certainly agree with the concept of keeping kids in school and starting at an earlier point in time. We seem to run into a lot of problems with parents even with that in some cases. So, and realizing that there is no single process that will lead to 100% success. What have you found in your experience for particularly the upper end, the those that turn 16 and are 17, keeping them in school and keeping them on track, keeping their interest? What have you found to be the most successful program?
First, there are lots of data about if a student can successfully complete ninth grade, their percentage chances of graduating are significantly greater than if they become credit deficient in ninth grade. So that effort really, really begins in preparing them in middle school so they're ready to be successful in grade nine. The challenge is, of course, is that adolescence is a time of a lot of poor decision making. At the time, they don't think it's a poor decision. And it ends them, causes them to end up in some situations that are hard to rectify. To answer your question most directly, what I found is creating strong relationships is number one. A number of students, and I found disproportionately those of Alaska Native heritage, feel disenfranchised when they feel invisible, when they feel unnoticed, when they feel that they're not recognized for what their skill may be, and in fact may be stereotyped instead. So I think that feeling of disenfranchisement or invisibility is key. So creating a relationship with each individual, letting them know what happens to you matters, and it matters to the adults who are around you. Secondly, curriculum that is relevant and engaging. And what that might mean are some smaller class sizes and some opportunities that are more active and hands-on than what you might see in a more traditional academic classroom. Thirdly, a strong advisee system, where if a student disappears even for a few days, someone is on the phone or at the door saying, what's happening? What can we do to assist? How can we bring you back? This really matters. You might not think it does right now, but in 10 years, you're going to wonder why you didn't finish high school. So I think those are three top things. Relationships, engaging relevant hands-on curriculum, and somebody who is your advocate and continues to be your advocate even when you're not at school, and especially when you're not at school. At the alternative high school here that I had the opportunity to serve in, we track students all year. We call them constantly, not to berate them, but to say, what is your plan for coming back? And having a number of reentry points during the year. In a typical high school, you have first semester and second semester. Starting in the middle of either of those is a huge handicap. At the alternative high school, we went on a quarterly system and made plans to cause students to be reentered.
Thank you. For me, picking up on the idea of curriculum, we're changing our curriculum now to be more rigorous. And I may not understand exactly what you're saying, so I'll just state it as I do. That concerns me a little bit. And obviously, we put a somewhat of an emphasis on vocational education, technical education as well. But that also requires some of that more rigor, because I think kids sometimes think, making those poor decisions when they're 15, 16, that they can just drop out of school and they'll get a job someplace and things will all work out. And realizing later, like the example you gave of the young woman that went in the military, I believe, and realized just how different it really was in the real world. So with that in mind, would you suggest that we still need to have an extremely broad curriculum to make sure that we can keep as many as possible interested in some other areas? It seems that as the budgets are squeezed, we squeeze the curriculum. Things are sorted off on the edges. Some particular areas of education that some believe are just as important as math and science, but they fall by the wayside because, I guess, in general, people don't believe that they're as important as maybe the math and the sciences. But for the purposes, if we look more narrowly at just keeping kids in school, the idea of having a broader curriculum so that they find something at least that they can cling on to.
Through the chair, you make a very important point, and I don't think this discussion ever should be one of either or. That said, if you've looked at vocational classes recently, they are loaded with math, science, engineering, and technology, or the STEM, as I'm sure you've heard. It is critical to fund a broad array of programs. We're in a state that is a resource extraction state. To extract resources takes a high degree of technology. We want to employ Alaskans and folks my age who arrived maybe to work on the pipeline in the 70s with some high-level skills. They're leaving. They're departing. Alaska faces a shortage as well of skilled folks in the construction industry. It's not building a log cabin with a moss roof anymore. It's building high-tech facilities that are green, that are energy savers, and that will last for a long time and be safe. I do think that high school is the opportunity to have a chance to explore a number of areas. It's just as important to know what you don't want to do as it is to discover what you might want to do. And those hands-on opportunities, which lead to the creation of real projects and tangible products that you can actually see, I think are critical to keeping students engaged. And they're today a very high-level challenge. I think vocational technical education is as rigorous as you'll find in a typical academic classroom.
Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions?
Just one.
Senator French.
Thanks, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Scanlon, thanks for being here. You're an excellent advocate, and I really appreciate the points you're making. And the bill sponsor put together a really good packet full of information, and I just want to bring one point to your attention and have you comment on it. This is from the National High School Center, and they're trying out a bunch of statistics, but the one that really caught my eye this morning when I was looking at the packet was this. It says, research has confirmed that the lowest performing readers are most at risk of dropping out of high school.
Mm-hmm.
I wonder what program, whether you have sufficient resources to concentrate on those poor readers and how you see their inability to read leading to a high dropout rate.
That's not surprising at all, because so much of learning by the time you hit fifth grade is academic learning. There's a phrase that says that from grades K through 3, you're learning to read, and from grades 4 on, you're reading to learn. And again, I go back to the statistics, and I encourage you to look at the district, Kennewick, Washington, which has made its number one goal the 100% grade level reading by grade 3. It's taken them 15 years, but they have done tremendous research on the national data associated with the inability to read at grade level by grade 3. And again, you have a 1 in 8 chance of ever catching up. Naturally, if you're a student who shows up and there's a textbook, have you seen the biology textbooks recently? Not kidding when I say orthopedists have said there are back problems for kids who carry around textbooks in these backpacks. They're significantly heavy. When you look at that and you're at a fourth grade reading level as a freshman, the shame, and I'll share personally, my brother is a high school dropout because he could not read, and this was prior to the public law on special education in the 1970s. And when you're presented with that way of learning, it's like being having polio and being in a brace and being asked to try out for the basketball team. It's not fun. It's not something you're going to feel successful at. Why go to school if that's how you're going to feel every day? I can't urge you enough to think about the long-term benefits of that early childhood education. Yes, we have resources to help students in high school, but they're minimal because the typical high school teacher, and I'm one of them, we're not trained to teach reading or even reading strategies. We're trained to teach our content, which might be social studies or English or science, and we expect students to arrive ready. And many of them do not. About, I would guess, based on some small local data sets, that 20 to 30% of students do not arrive in high school ready for ninth grade English or mathematics.
Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Very good. Thank you. And thank you for your testimony.
Thank you for giving me so much time. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Thank you.
I believe Carl Rose. Morning, Carl.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Carl Rose, Executive Director of the Association of Alaska School Boards. I want to thank the committee for taking this issue up. We were supportive of the bill last year, and we thank the senator for bringing it up again. We are resolved in support of Senate Bill 9. I'm not going to replow the ground that Lori just went through. What a wonderful piece of testimony. I would like to associate myself with her comments and share with you my view as a parent and my view as an individual who suffers from dyslexia. I didn't realize that until I graduated from college. This whole idea of keeping kids in school, The law actually legitimizes kids being allowed to leave. For all the effort that we try to put into our kids in terms of providing them with a quality education, we have a bill that legitimizes them leaving. If the going gets tough, even if they think the going gets tough, they can leave at 16 years of age. What a terrible disincentive for young people. We're asking our systems to provide more rigor and more relevance for kids. And what we're asking our system to do is to challenge kids and to make it more palatable for them. But to allow them to simply leave school if they don't feel like taking on that challenge, if they don't want the rigor, I think is wrong-minded. So for all the testimony that was read into the record, I thought the sponsor's statement pretty much says it all. I will share with you a comment was made here about the Kennewick School District. We're looking right now because I think the evidence will show us that by the third grade, if kids are not prepared and proficient reading, writing, and math, that's where they first intersect with the learning gap. And so by the time they're 15 and 16 years of age, if they're struggling, their entire system, their entire experience, what kind of opportunities do we have? And I think that Laurie shared with you, she spent some of her time in alternative schools. These alternative schools are designed to try to create a better learning environment for those kids who've been struggling. To allow kids to simply drop out at age 16 negates the efforts of many educators to try to provide people with a quality education. So I would share with you, as a former student who struggled, who learned to decode on his own, I did not know what an itinerant speech pathologist was. But I will tell you, if I was allowed to quit early, I may have considered it if I wasn't a blue chip athlete. And I may have considered dropping out. I only share these comments with you is because, I mean, how many of among us think that a child that is 15 years of age, that just turned 16, is equipped to make a decision like that that will alter the rest of their lives? I don't think anyone here thinking sensibly would agree with that. But because the law states what it states, there's no reason for us not to change it. So I would thank you for your consideration, and I'll try to answer any questions you might have. Thank you.
Carl, I guess I have a question. It sounds like this, I believe the sponsor said this has been in place since 1929. And certainly society has changed a lot since 1929. And I'd imagine back in 1929, believe it or not, that's before my time. Especially a boy reached age 16, they were kind of looked at as to get a job and help support the family. Now, that's not the case so much. But in rural Alaska, is some of those traditions still alive that, once the boy reaches age 16, he's expected to help with the fishing and hunting and with the family? And I don't know. I know rural Alaska is much different than what I'm used to, which is urban Alaska.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's an excellent question. I will share with you this, that for some of the young men, anyway, the young men who live out in rural Alaska, the expectation that they can pursue a life of hunting and gathering and subsistence is a very seductive proposition. A very seductive proposition. You can find yourself a girlfriend, get married, have kids, and there are a whole number of choices that can be made, and they're legitimized by the state. I think if we required people to stay in school, you would see that, if people are going to break the law, they're going to break the law. But to legitimize it, I think, is not not in the best interest of our citizenship, especially people who are below the age of majority. I say this because I know of many parents who are very concerned for their young men, especially. If they're challenged and they're struggling in school, a subsistence lifestyle is something that they can exercise very easily in the short term. Those decisions will cause them to set a trajectory in their lives that they may not be able to recover from. And I would simply ask that, because of my experience working with school districts and working in the rural areas, many of the people there, there's a dichotomy. If a kid gets an education, there's nowhere to use it in the village, so they have to leave. On the other hand, if the kid doesn't receive an education and chooses to stay there, then they're trapped. And so, depending on who you're talking to, that's a very difficult distinction to look at. So I won't go any farther into that other than to say that young people, given an opportunity to take an easier road, what road do you think they would take? I think they take the easier road, and I would ask you to consider providing an opportunity and incentives for them to continue on with their education and stay in school.
Very good. Thank you, Carl. See no other questions. Appreciate you, your testimony and joining us this morning. Hey, I believe on the phone here we do have Superintendent of the Anchorage School District, Carol Como. Carol, are you still with us?
Carol.
Okay.
Hello, this is Carol Como.
Morning.
Hi, I'm the superintendent with the Anchorage School District, and I heard part of the testimony, and what I really wanted to emphasize, this is a priority for our school district, and it has been for a number of years. I understand all the arguments about students who are disengaged in school and causing trouble in classrooms, but our community has come forward loud and clear, as well as through our school board process, that we think 16 is too young to make such a serious decision on whether to drop out of school or not. And one of the other things I found out last fall from the Army, and I asked them for a letter, and I gave it out to all the principals, that they are not now accepting students without a high school diploma. They have enough recruits that they do not need to accept anyone with just a GED. And I think what's happening is too many students from around the state and even in our city think, well, if I don't like school, I can get my GED and just go into the military. That's not the case anymore. That's one thing. The other thing is that, and I know Lori Scandling talked about this, that many of our parents, or Mr. Overmeyer did, talked about how critical it is to have the backup of the law saying, you need to stay in school. Your job, we need you to get an education. And it really gives them another tool to work with their students and the school to keep students engaged in school. Now, our responsibility, obviously, as educators, is try and figure out, by building good relationships with our students, what is going to keep them motivated, what is going to help them understand that in this global economy that education is absolutely essential, and the bare bottom line should be a high school diploma rather than a GED. So our board and our administration is very strongly supportive of this piece of legislation as far as the 18 or a high school diploma. And certainly we've always supported lowering the compulsory education age at least to a minimum of 6. And like Ms. Scandling, I think many of us would like pre-K or kindergarten because we know what a difference it makes. But certainly getting more kids into kindergarten or first grade at the earliest will make a big difference in their overall school success. So I'd be happy to answer any questions, but I just really wanted to let you know that this has been a priority for quite some time.
Great. Well, thank you for that testimony. I do have one question, Carol, if I may. How do we enforce the existing law? What are the penalties for a student who's age 15 and just decides they don't want to go to school anymore? What can you do?
Well, it's difficult. There's no question. And one of the things we have done is we try everything, and our graduation coaches have gone a long way with our truants and our students who are struggling to stay in school. really trying to make that connection at home, whether some home visits. We've, in some cases, used our school resource officers to work with our school counselors and graduation coaches to make home visits or to call the parent and say, if they're under 16, you're in violation of the compulsory education law. Many of the parents will say, I need your help to help my student understand that. And sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But we've developed a lot of alternative programs to try and keep these students in school. But we don't have truant officers, and the police certainly aren't able to spend much of their time going out, knocking on doors, collecting students. So that is a difficulty, but we just think the overall strength of this would be the message it sends. It's not okay.
Okay. Very good. Senator French?
Just a quick question, and good morning, Carol. Nice to hear your voice. Just I'm wondering sort of fundamentally, does it work? Do states that raise the compulsory age, and I've got to believe they don't have any more truancy powers than we have, experience an increase in their high school graduation rate?
Senator French, I don't know that. Mr. Obermeyer might have that research. I know anecdotally in talking to other superintendents around the country when I go to a national conference, they say it's making a difference. And much of the same reasons, because I go to urban school district conferences and all of them are struggling with the same thing. Of many families are trying to get their students at 16 to go to work to help support the family's income, but they also are struggling with understanding the importance. So I don't know. I don't have any statistical information on that question.
Thank you.
Mr. Chairman, we have some information on that, but we certainly would be happy to bring back more information at the next hearing.
Okay. Yeah, I think that would be very helpful, Senator Davis. Okay, any other questions for Ms. Como? Okay, Senator Thomas.
Thank you, Ms. Como. Not necessarily a question, but not only does the military require a GED at a minimum, but also the apprenticeship programs all require GEDs and actually do further testing on particularly reading comprehension and math skills. So appreciate your comments.
Oh, I agree. In fact, that's the other thing that we've been told, that they do allow a GED with the testing, but the military does not anymore, at least the latest information I got from the Army. And they were the only ones at that point that were taking GEDs. But certainly the apprenticeship programs and absolutely require that additional testing.
Thank you.
Okay, very good. Seeing no other questions, Ms. Como, thank you for joining us this morning.
Thank you so much. Bye-bye.
Bye. Okay, that is everyone that I have who's signed up to testify. Is there anyone else in the room here that perhaps came in and still would like to testify? Okay, please. If you would just put your name on the record for us.
Yes, good morning. Thank you, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I'm Bruce Johnson, the new executive director for the Alaska Council of School Administrators, the new Mary Frances that you was probably sat at this table occasionally. Our membership consists of superintendents, principals, and business officials. So the Alaska Council of School Administrators represents all of them. And this is an important issue for them. They agree that it would be beneficial to have this bill passed on both ends, both the getting kids into school as early as possible. We are strong, strong supporters of early childhood education, as well as whatever levers we might have to keep kids in school as long as possible. More education is generally better for almost everyone if it can be somewhat of a positive experience for them. So you want to do everything possible to have them with you as long as you possibly can. I was superintendent at Mount Edgecombe, and I'll bring that piece in, where when we selected our new enrollees at Mount Edgecombe, it was generally about 140 students a year at that point in time, and 40 or 50 of those young people did not read well enough to tackle the curriculum that we offered at Mount Edgecombe. It was a college preparatory program. It's the way it was, but we didn't have enough students that had the requisite skills to do that. And we talked about intervention strategies, and the intervention strategy that we came up with there was we needed to have reading teachers on staff. We had good college preparatory language arts English teachers, but not reading teachers. And we found the money through our title programs to send people off to a two-year training program, so we ended up teaching adolescent reading. And I think if you look at the graduation rate out of Mount Edgecombe from mid-90s to today, you'll see that some of those adjustments that they made, they're just all kinds of examples of how to both make the curriculum relevant so kids are wanting to stay in, and then, you know, secondly, adjusting it so that you've got the teaching staff and support staff that can make that a reality. So our membership's behind us. We encourage you to strongly consider it. We know there's challenges. The police are probably not going to have this a high priority, but they're, if we can even save half of the kids and keep them in school longer, we're going to be much better off. So appreciate the opportunity to testify and would answer any questions that you may have.
Thank you for your testimony. Any questions? See none. Thank you for joining us this morning. Okay, was there anybody else online in the audience that would like to testify? Seeing none, we'll go ahead and close the public testimony on Senate Bill 9.
Mr. Chairman.
Yes, Senator Davis.
When you say closed testimony, are you saying for today only, or are you saying closed? Because if you're going to hold this bill over and there are people that want to testify when it comes back again, I would like for them to have that opportunity. So I don't know if you really want to close it or not.
Well, I think the intent was to take the public testimony today and then bring the bill back up, have discussion amongst ourselves, and make amendments and pass it out. Certainly if somebody wants to testify and you'd like to hear from them, we can invite them to testify.
All right, thanks.
Okay, so we have heard quite a bit of testimony on this bill. The lower age doesn't seem to be the issue as much as the upper age, which we will bring this back up and discuss it more as a committee. But for today, I think that is all we're going to have time to deal with, and that is everything that's on the agenda. Now, Wednesday.
Mr. Chairman, could I just do a couple of closing remarks?
Go ahead,
on the
Senator.
Bill?
Sure.
I know it's coming back before us. So I want to thank the committee for the chairs for bringing this early. This has a judiciary and a finance committee hearing to be held, so there's other places for it to go. At some point, I think we have to realize that it's time for us to make the difference in our children's life and begin to do those things that we think is going to keep them in school, rather than talk about what might happen if we make this a law. Now, we had truant officers back in the day. I served on the school board 12 years, almost 12 years. And they did not have money. I think Juneau School District is probably the only one that take money out of their budgets to pay for a truant officer here. But the state used to fund some of that money to the districts for them to have truant officers, but that's not what's needed. You need community involvement, you need parental involvement, and the professional folks are already on board saying this is what they need as a tool to keep those children in school and get them to graduate. And I'd like for us to pay close attention to that because it's quite important. You know, once we change that law, the kids down in elementary school is not going to have a problem with that, because that's all they're going to know. They know that, hey, I got to be in school until I'm 18 unless I do these things. Now, those that are now at that 16 age, sure, they might be rebellious. Some of them might find out to be that it's a good thing for them to have it. Others won't. But some of the worst things that happen to our kids are what happened after the school hours when parents are working and no one is supervising what's going on. We need to do everything that we can to keep our children in school. And so what I'm saying to this committee, this is just one hearing that we're having, but this is important. You know, we worry about those, you know, we're talking about all the non-traditional students that we have in college that now have come back and found out that they should have been there. We could cut down on that even if we start in the beginning from pre-K all the way up, working with our children and providing to them the best resources that we can. And the other thing, we did not get the information from the district, I mean not the district, but from the department to answer that one question someone asked Maybe they could bring it back the next time. But since they are here, we're trying to join at 9, right?
Yes.
So they probably have to come back later. But anyway, thank you for hearing the bill. And please let us know if there are other information that you need that might make you feel more comfortable in passing this bill out of committee.
Okay. Thank you, Senator Davis. And yes, I think, Senator Thomas, you still have a question outstanding. And that's why I wanted to close the public testimony, because I do want to hear from the administration now on how this would get implemented, as well as any amendments or concerns that the committee may have. So we will bring this back up. I am a little this has always bothered me, frankly, is that we do hear from the administrators, the principals, and superintendents, but we often don't hear from the general public. And obviously, 8 o'clock in the morning is not the best time to call in and testify. But if there are some parents out there that could at least send us some emails and let us know what the what they think as well about this bill, I think that would be very helpful.
The one comment I'd like to make on that, we've had lots of parental input in the previous years that this bill has been heard, and I'd like to hear from more again. But many of those that started off thinking that this was not a good thing over the years have changed their mind and find out that it might be a good thing to have.
Very good.
So it's not like we haven't had parental input, and I'd like to have more.
Yeah. And if you know some of those folks that could, if nothing else, send us an email, or as I mentioned, if you want to invite one or two of them to testify, we'd be happy to allow them to do so. Okay. So the next meeting is Wednesday. We do hope to finish up the performance scholarship at that time. That's Senate Bill 43. And then I believe Senate Bill 83, which is the teacher incentive, which is yours, Senator Thomas, that we'd hope to get started on today. We'll hear that as well on Wednesday. Senate Bill 8, which has to do with the student questionnaires and surveys, I doubt if we'll have time. That's yours, I believe, Senator Davis.
It is.
I don't think we'll have time to get to that on Wednesday. If we do, we'll get started on it. Otherwise, the plan would be to take up Senate Bill 43, the Performance Scholarship, Senate Bill 9, and then get started on Senate Bill 8, and possibly bring back up Senate Bill 9 at that time. If not, then the meeting after that. Okay. Is there any questions committee members may have? Okay. If not, we're adjourned.